This week on the show, are the Red Sox and the Yankees on a collision course for some late-season fireworks? Matt McCarthy of 98.5 and Barry Sachs from ESPN join us to break it down. Plus, these NBA playoffs, they've been terrible. What am I talking about? Make sure to listen all the way through. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It. May 8th, Alex Barth, your host. We will talk some baseball today. We will get into the NBA playoffs as well. We will start with the Boston Red Sox. And on the phone to help us discuss what has been an interesting Red Sox season so far is Matt McCarthy of 98.5, the Sports Hub. Matt, how's it going?
It's going well, Alex. Always great to be on. Thanks for having me.
I think you've set the record. This is, what, your third or fourth appearance?
I know. Wow, you're really digging the bottom of the barrel, huh?
Oh, come on now. So the Red Sox, they put up 10 runs in an inning this weekend. The bats got going. Did the Red Sox finally, they couldn't hit at all at the beginning of the season. We know about the Chris Sale run support. Did the Red Sox finally learn how to hit, or do the Twins just suck?
No, the Red Sox didn't finally learn how to hit. They faced a guy on Saturday, Nick Kepich. Who knows? Who really cares? Because he's not a big league arm. And then Irvin Santana was horrendous yesterday, and that Twins bullpen is even worse. You know, when you're trotting guys like Craig Breslow, you know, the corpse of Craig Breslow out, you know you're not exactly going up against the real teeth of the league. So,
but since,
listen, you know, I like what John Farrell did, switching up the lineup, you know, but I'm not going to let one series determine, you know, whether I think the Red Sox can hit this year. I'm going to need a little bit more from them to truly let me buy in on this offense, finally.
But Santana had been outstanding this year. I think he had a sub-1 ERA going into yesterday. Obviously, that's changed, but was it really just him not pitching as well yesterday, or did the Red Sox figure him out?
It's a little bit of both. You know, you watched him early on, and he couldn't locate anything. So, you know, Santana has been great this year, but he has done it really against the dregs of the leagues. You know, and of course, the Red Sox, you know, entering the weekend 27th in the big leagues in runs scored. I mean, I guess you could, you know, put them into that category. So I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, listen, you know, Santana's a solid big league pitcher. He's nothing spectacular. He, you know, he's not the, you know, 0.60 ERA or whatever he had heading into yesterday. But, you know, he's not a, you know, six run a start, you know, type of guy either. So, you know, I'm willing to chalk that up as, you know, Santana not having a great outing. But again, Saturday, you know, was against, you know, just a nobody. So I just need to see a little bit more from this Red Sox offense before I buy in, because I'm not going to let one series in Minnesota, when the ball's traveling out of that ballpark, you know, on a beautiful weekend, I'm not going to let that determine for me whether the Red Sox can actually hit or not this year.
But the long ball was there this weekend. We saw three from Sandy Leon. Christian Vasquez has been hitting well as well. And as my dad reminded me yesterday, Blake Swihart is still hanging out in AAA. What is the Red Sox long-term plan at catcher right now? What have you gathered as their long-term plan? And then if they do need to make a trade, are those three guys, are they the top candidates to go to move? Would a catcher be their first move?
See, I would move Swihart. And, you know, I've never been as high on Swihart as other people, just because I don't think he can really stick a catcher in the big leagues. You know, maybe he can play there, but I don't think he's ever going to be great behind the plate. And I want whoever is catching for me to be a defense-first catcher. You need to be able to handle the pitching staff. You need to be able to throw runners out. You need to be able to call a good game, frame pitches. I just don't think Swihart can do any of that. And offensively, I know everybody says, you know, he's this big, bat catcher. He hasn't shown me enough at the big league level offensively to say that I can justify putting him behind the plate. So I think Swihart has always been a valuable trade chip for them. If they need to make a move, I would not have an issue with them moving on from Swihart. You know, after talking to me a bunch, Alex,
yep,
that Christian Vasquez is my guy.
Right.
I mean, I love the way he calls the game. I mean, he is a force in the running game. Nobody runs on that guy. So I really do think that he is the future for the Red Sox, at least, you know, for this season. I think he ultimately wins this job. I mean, he had won it, you know, recently before Leon, you know, had this great weekend in Minnesota. Vasquez was catching three out of the five pitchers. So, I mean, you know, in that case, he's the starter. You know, you'll take what you get from Leon, you know, this kind of offensive output. I still don't, you know, necessarily buy it. You know, he had certainly been struggling before, you know, before this weekend. So, you know, you take what you get offensively from that position. But, you know what, most importantly, Leon and Vasquez have called good games this year. They have handled the staff well. They have really controlled the running game, the both of them. I think they're pretty much set defensively this year, and that's what matters to me the most. They've got two backstops who can catch first and foremost. That's what's truly important.
Combining the defensive output and the offensive output, the Red Sox have had their worst third base performance in the last 20 years. Not surprising, considering they have no major leaguers there. Pablo Sandoval, I guess you think he's going to come back from the DL at some point. My biggest issue is, what is it, when he's hitting left-handed, I think, he's like a sub-100 hitter. And if I have the wrong side of the plate, correct me, but at what point, and you would know better than me, because you've been around baseball more than I have, can the manager or maybe Chili Davis, the hitting coach, just go to him and be, hey, cut it out, hit from one side of the plate, or you're not going to hit at all?
Yeah, I mean, and they tried that a little bit a few years ago. I think it was, 2015, Sandoval's first year here. He stopped hitting right-handed. He's never been a good right-handed hitter. So, you know, that's been a consideration that they've gone back and forth on over the years. I think he may have stopped hitting right-handed at times for San Francisco. So I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if eventually, you know, at some point this season, if Sandoval comes back, if he's playing third base for this team, that if they tried that again, just tried to keep him from that left side of the plate, where he is certainly a better hitter than the right. But honestly, you know, Alex, I'm not even necessarily worried about it, you know, or thinking about it, because is Pablo Sandoval going to come back and take this job? I mean, that's really, you know, first and foremost, let's figure out if this guy's actually going to be able to hit from either side of the
right
plate to justify his spot in the lineup. And not that there's anybody who's going to take his job right now. Holt's hurt. Hernandez is hurt, and Hernandez really can't field. I mean, between Hernandez and Sandoval, I mean, that is a black hole defensively. Holt is not great defensively as well. And, you know, Josh Rutledge and Chase D'Arnaud and Devin Marrero certainly aren't the answers here. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Rafael Devers, who's, you know, is really starting to hit up in Portland. But he's 20 years old. He's still struggling with lefties up there. Still too many strikeouts against guys who really know how to pitch at the Double-A level, guys who have, you know, some big league experience, because you'll encounter that there, certainly at Double-A, more than you'll encounter that at Single-A. So, you know, if you're counting on Devers to be that guy at third base, I'd say pump the brakes. As, you know, special of a player as I think he could be, yeah, I think you got to wait a little bit on that. I think that's a next year solution, not a this year solution. I don't think that's an Andrew Benintendi type situation where he comes in and he's all of a sudden, you know, the guy and can, you know, step right in and take the job. You might be looking at a situation, Alex, where they're going to have to actually spend some capital, use some capital, and go out and get a Mike Moustakas at the deadline, go out and get, I don't know, Josh Harrison from Pittsburgh, you know, a third baseman who might be available, because this is a black hole. It's been a black hole for them for a while, ever since they traded Euclid, ever since they let Adrian Beltre go. They have not been able to figure it out at third base, and I am nowhere near convinced that Pablo Sandoval, if he returns and if he is healthy, two big questions, if he's the guy. I still don't know whether he can actually perform. I mean, that's a big question. So a lot of questions at third base.
Now, what about Sam Travis?
Well, Travis is a guy who's mostly played first. I mean, you know, you could certainly try it. I know he's played some time, you know, seen some time at third. I mean, he might be a guy who, you know, you have to give a look here soon. I mean, he's in AAA, you know, so he's farther along than Devers. You know, at this point, you know, honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know what he's hitting at Pawtucket. I don't know if you have those, you know, numbers in front of you. I don't know how he's been at Pawtucket this year, but, you know, eventually you have to give a guy like that a look. Because, you know, is Josh Rutledge going to be your answer? Is Chase D'Arnaud going to be your answer? No. And, you know, you're going to have to make a decision in July whether you're going to go out and trade for somebody. So sometime in June, if things are still going, you know, at third base, and, you know, Travis has at least proven enough in AAA to justify that he can, you know, take some at-bats away from, you know, Josh Rutledge, I'd say give it a look. Absolutely. I mean, why not? What do you have to lose at that point? Because decision times are coming in July as to whether you're going to have to go out and get somebody. And you really, you know, you really don't want to have to spend that capital. I mean, you've gone out and you've really taken, you know, a lot of players out of this farm system. Mauricio Dubon, you know, an infielder, Travis Shaw, who you traded for Tyler Thornburg, who, you know, you haven't seen at all this year. Who knows if you will see this year? You never know with arm guy, you know, guys dealing with arm situations. So, you know, do you want to go out and make another trade for a, you know, a guy like Moustakas, who's going to be a free agent? Yeah, he'll improve your team this year, but do you want to, you know, pillage your farm system again when you're trying to rebuild it? You want to trade a guy like Bobby Dalbec, who might be your third baseman of the future 3 years from now, who's got a lot of power in the low minors and hit really well for the Cape League. I don't know if you necessarily want to do that. So if you can give Travis a look here at some point, I'd say go for it.
Cape League shout-out. Love Dalbec, by the way. Travis hitting .237 in 76 at-bats this year. Not big power numbers either.
A little early there. A little early, but you give him more time. See if he figures he's coming off an injury. He had the knee injury last year. So you give him more time to adjust into the season. It's still, the first week of May. First week of June, second week of June, if he's starting to put it together a little bit down in Pawtucket, I say you go right there and you get him and see what he can do at the big league level. Give him a chance to win the job. Give him a chance to win some at-bats. .237, at this point you're not going to go to him because that's not fair to his development. But if he starts to, see a bit of an uptick in production in Pawtucket as he gets, more comfortable returning to the playing field, seeing AAA hitting again, I could see that as a potential option. But, not before, not this month. You're going to have to figure it out this month, but maybe next month.
Again, we're talking with Matt McCarthy of 98.5, the Sports Hub. Matt, you mentioned the bullpen briefly there in your response. It kind of got swept under the rug this weekend because the offense was working so well. But injuries, Stephen Wright's going to be out for the year, it sounds like, with his knee injury. The bullpen is still banged up. What's your bigger concern right now, the lack of starting pitching depth or the fact that there's nobody outside of the closer reliable in the bullpen?
Yeah, I would say the bullpen because I feel like they're strong enough in the rotation to get by if their fourth and fifth starters aren't necessarily great. Like, you can do a lot worse than Drew Pomeranz as your fourth starter. If he can continue to give you what he's given you, you'll be fine. Fifth starter, you hope David Price can come back. He's going to go out on a rehab, right? Sounds like this weekend. So, all of a sudden, maybe David Price can come back and obviously rejoin the rotation, and then it's certainly a lot better than it is now. Rodriguez has been solid. Pomeranz has been solid. Obviously, Porcello, has been a little disappointing, but is still a, high-quality big league pitcher, and Sale's been outstanding. So, if Price doesn't come back, yeah, sure, you have to figure out the fifth spot at that point, but I have much bigger questions about the bullpen because I feel like they have more spots to fill in the bullpen without the hope of getting a guy like David Price back. I don't trust Matt Barnes. I don't trust Joe Kelly. Do you really trust Robbie Scott? Can they get lefties out? Here's the thing. Craig Kimbrell has been outstanding.
Yep.
He's having one of the best years he's had, since his Atlanta years. I mean, this is as good as Kimbrell has been in a long time. And he's a weapon at this point out of the bullpen. And they went to him in the eighth inning yesterday. I loved what John Farrell did going into him in the eighth, something he's been hesitant to do in the past. Kimbrell has really masked a lot of the deficiencies that they've had in the bullpen because he's been truly outstanding. Once it gets to the ninth inning, I mean, game over, the way this guy's pitching. And, their bullpen deficiencies have certainly been, masked a little bit by the fact that they're getting solid starts from their starters. They're getting, every one of these guys is giving them essentially six innings, with the exception of Pomeranz, who will give you five. Chris Sale is going to give you 7 to 8 every time out. Rick Porcello has that capability. Eddie Rodriguez is giving you six solid innings every time he goes out. So, you're not seeing the problems with this bullpen that I think could certainly arise throughout the season as you have to lean on them more throughout the summer.
Will we see, just quick answer, will we see Tyler Thornburg or Carson Smith this year?
Yes. The question is, will you see them for an extended period of time this year? Smith is working his way back, it sounds like. I mean, who knows what the deal is with Thornburg. My guess is you will see one, maybe both of them at this point, but the question is, is it like last year where Carson Smith comes out, has three or four appearances, and then gets shut down, and he's a forgotten man, you never see him again? I mean, that would be my true fear. I mean, I think you will eventually see one, if not both, but whether they are effective, I would not even begin to venture a guess because that would be a futile exercise, because with these guys, you just never know. You really don't.
Just paper mache arms. Again, we're talking with Matt McCarthy of 98.5, the Sports Hub. Matt, the Red Sox and the Orioles, they got after it last week. They now don't play again until June. Was this just kind of a bad blood series between the two? Are they done, or is it going to get nasty when they meet again?
Yeah, I don't think it'll get nasty when they meet again. These things tend to die down once they really come to the surface, like it did, this past week, where guys are getting thrown at, guys are getting, hit. Eventually, once Major League Baseball steps in and says, knock it off, I think we've seen the last of this. Listen, I mean, Machado got thrown at a million times. Betts got hit. Benintendi got thrown at. Pedroia got spiked. Eventually, you know, it just stops. And now that they don't play until June, if they were playing, you know, this week, maybe it would come up again. I think now that, you know, they don't play until June, I think it'll die down. I mean, those two teams don't like each other. Buck Showalter, we know, always likes to stick it to the Red Sox. And that's fine, and that's fun, and it's good for baseball, and it's a great rivalry right now. But I don't see the headhunting continuing in June unless, you know, something else comes up, unless somebody else gets spiked, unless, you know, something,
right,
kind of sparks it back up again. So I would be surprised if it continued, conscious effort to make it continue. I would be very surprised if that happened.
So then the team the Red Sox might have to worry about the most right now is the hottest team in baseball, the New York Yankees. Who would have thunk it? They have the best record in baseball. They just swept the defending World Series champions. Are we looking at, for the first time in who knows how long, we've all needed it, some late season Red Sox-Yankees top of the division drama?
I would hope so, because that would mean that the Red Sox are still in it at this point. And, you know, Alex, I mean, they're a team that's been floundering around 500. You know, they're a game or two over 500. And the Yankees have the best record in baseball right now. So, I'm very much hoping that both the Red Sox and Yankees are in it. I mean, I think that would be great to have some meaningful September baseball between these two teams for the first time really in a long time. I don't necessarily know if I buy, you know, the Yankees being the best team in baseball at this point. I still think they're very young. I thought this was what the Yankees were going to do a year or two from now. They've certainly seemed to accelerate the schedule. But I don't buy their pitching staff, so I don't know if they're the type of team that's going to be able to keep this up over the course of a 162-game season. I'm not trying to take anything away from them, because I do think they are a good baseball club, and I think they will absolutely be a competitor for a playoff spot this year, maybe even winning the division. But I think they're playing a little over their heads right now, which is fine. Teams will do that. I think they'll drop back to the pack a little bit. But that's a good club. They're much better than I thought they were going to be, and they're exciting. You know, they've got some really good young players. They've got more players on the way with Torres, who's supposed to be pretty legit. Aaron Judge is a better hitter than I ever thought he would be. You know, after watching him hit for Brewster, I thought that this guy was just a Brewster in the Cape League. I thought that this guy was just an all-power, you know, swing-and-miss Adam Dunn type. He's certainly been better than that. Sanchez, we know, is also a, you know, total power guy. So they've got two guys who could really, really mash if they can figure out a way to keep the strikeouts down. And Sanchez did that last year, and Judge has done that so far this year. So there's a lot to be really excited about as far as the Red Sox-Yankees, potentially being good at the same time for the next few years. Let's just see if the Yankees pitching staff can hold up, because if you're counting on guys like Tanaka, Sabathia, I mean, you name it, I mean, I don't think that's a recipe for success over the course of the season, but it's certainly worked for them so far.
Matt McCarthy of 98.5 The Sports Hub, thanks for taking the time. You can find him on Twitter at MattMcCarthy985. Go figure. And hopefully in September we're talking some Red Sox-Yankees pennant race, Matt.
You and me both. That would be great for the Red Sox, for the Yankees, and for baseball. Most importantly, I'm sorry, Alex, you know, baseball is better when the Red Sox and the Yankees are good, without a doubt.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Colin. The Yankees over the weekend swept the defending World Series champion Chicago Cubs. They now have the best record in baseball and maybe the hottest team in the league as well. To help explain why, we're joined on the phone by an executive producer for 20 years at ESPN, Barry Sachs. Barry, thanks for coming on.
Always a pleasure, Alex.
So, I guess the first question, what is going on? This was a 500 team last year. For the first time in who knows how long, the Yankees didn't make any huge adds. Is this all Aaron Judge?
No, it's not all Aaron Judge. It's actually probably, if you want to give the credit to somebody, I guess you really got to give it to Brian Cashman. You know, we've put together a really nice mix of veterans and young players. Obviously, Judge is playing out of his mind, and it's been great. But Matt Holliday has been a really good addition to the team. The pitching staff has been good. you know, getting Chapman back and the young players and everything that came with him. You know, the team just has a really good feel of youth and veteran together. And look, it's really early, but, you know, it's really been a fun team to watch. And they've played through injuries. You know, Bird is hurt. Sanchez missed a month. D.D. Gregorius missed a month. Headley playing really well at third base. Castro, I believe, is leading the major leagues in hitting, or at least leading the American League. You know, right now it's fun, but it'll only last as long as their starting pitching lasts. And obviously it's a question mark every time any of them go out to the mound.
And Cervino's the one who stands out to me. He seems to have made a jump, hit that next level. What is he doing differently this year that's brought him to this next level that he maybe wasn't doing in the past?
Well, what all of them are doing that they haven't done in the past is throw strikes. You know, there's nothing worse than anybody coming in the game and just start throwing balls and walking people. So Severino, he's throwing 98. Velocity's been tremendous. He's had good placement, not walking people. Look, you know, when you're getting outs and your team can score some runs, you have a chance. The other thing that, you know, is great with the team, from basically if the Yankees could take a lead through six, game's over.
Right.
Now, again, you know, you're going to have situations like you did last night where Chapman may blow a lead, but that's not common. You know, if they can go Warren or Clippard to Betances to Chapman, you know, you take a lead after six, that's pretty tough to beat. And that's what they've been able to do. They've been getting good starting pitching. CC's been okay. Tanaka's been okay. Severino's been really good. If you could get a lead through six innings or be really close, you got a chance to win some games, and that's what they've been doing.
Did you stay up for all 18 innings last night?
I did. I kind of took a little doze around the 12th. You know, it's funny. I was going to go to bed early. I went upstairs at about 10 o'clock and turned the TV back on and watch it again. You just couldn't go to sleep. It was, you know, Chapman happened, and then you just waited. But exciting game, great weekend for the Yankees. But every game has just been fun to watch. They're a fun team to watch, and that's awesome.
And it reminded me of, what was it, 2 years ago, the Red Sox and Yankees went to 18 innings. And speaking of the Red Sox and the Yankees, because this is a Boston-based show, I'm sure you saw this coming. Red Sox seem to have finally found their stroke. The Yankees clearly are playing well. Is this setting up to perhaps it's really early to say this, but perhaps setting up to late season dramatics, a run for the AL East? Are these the top two teams in the division right now?
Well, yes, they're the top two teams in the division right now, but the Orioles are also a good team. I don't know really what's going on with the Blue Jays, but yes, the Yankees and the Red Sox, I'd say right now, are the two top teams. But again, I have a lot of respect for Buck and the Orioles as well. But as I said before, and I think the same thing holds true for the Red Sox, it comes down to starting pitching. You know, and if either team is going to get good starting pitching, with the bullpens and the offenses that appear to be there, you got chances to win games. So from the Red Sox point of view, same thing. You know, Sale, unbelievable. You know, is Price coming back? But the bullpen's pretty good. But at the end of the day, starting pitching's going to win it. And the team that gets better starting pitching throughout the year is going to be the team that wins the AL East.
What do the Yankees need to do to keep up this hot streak? Obviously, this is a pace that's nearly impossible to keep up for 162 games, but what's the one thing they need to avoid in order to fall back into their fumbles of last year?
Again, it's pitching. You know, the team is really deep. You know, and I think you even saw that last night. I mean, in an 18-inning game, and these moves were made early, you know, Judge came out of that game for defensive purposes in the eighth inning. Holiday came out of the game. You know, between Ellsbury and Gardner, you have flexibility, and Hicks is playing really well. So from a lineup point of view, they're very deep. They can make moves. Like I said, the bullpen is lights out when it's been. You know, Warren and Betances, they're terrific. So again, it's going to come down to pitching. How long does the pitching hold up? Tanaka, for 3 years, has basically been a pitch away from Tommy John surgery. We've been waiting for that to happen, and it hasn't happened yet. You know, CC goes out there and throws a good game, throws a bad game. Michael Pineda, never really know what you're going to get from him when he goes on the mound. And even Severino's been pitching well, but when he goes out there, not sure what he's going to do either. Montgomery's looked pretty nice as that fifth starter. So pitching, starting pitching, if it holds up, great. You know, maybe we make a move. We got a lot of young bodies. We got a lot of people we can move. If there's an arm out there that we can get to help solidify, you know, I think that's what the need is. But this whole thing will be determined by starting pitching. The hitting is there. The depth is there. The defense is pretty good. It all comes down to pitching.
And you mentioned the young bodies. The Yankees have always been known to trade off their farm system, go get the established talent. It's taken a different turn here with Aaron Judge and company. When's the last time you can remember the Yankees succeeding this much with their own homegrown farm system?
Well, again, you know, you go back to the heydays, you got to remember, you know, Jeter, Mariano, Posada, Pettit, those were homegrown players.
Does this
so,
group?
So, I mean, that's what you're kind of comparing this to.
Does this group have
but,
a chance
you know,
to catch
going
that
out
group?
And getting the big name player, you know, that was George. And I love George, you know, nothing better as a fan, you know, than knowing if I'm paying money to go to the ballpark, you're taking my money and turning it right around and putting it back into the team. But, you know, when George died, unfortunately, or left the team, Hank and the family, it's a different philosophy. And we're not necessarily spending that kind of money anymore. And we decided to make trades and go with the draft and get some young people. There's certainly talk in, you know, the year or two ahead with the Manny Machados and Bryce Harper's available. You know, now with players and money, maybe we do it with Alex Rodriguez off the contract, Teixeira off the contract. You know, we now have some money to maybe go out and add a player of that ilk in the next year or two. But, you know, they're kind of comparing this team, you know, to the late 90s, early 2000s, where it was the core, the young core of homegrown players that got it done. I'm not saying that these guys are going to match up to what those guys were because those guys did it.
Yep.
You know, the rings are there to show it. But at least, again, it's fun, and it's good to know that it's a young team that should be together for a while. And there's also still a lot of really young talent in the minor leagues that are supposed to be, you know, potential superstar players that they got from the Chapman deal and other deals that were made.
And one more question. Again, we're talking with Barry Sachs, formerly of ESPN. And Barry, you were around Bristol for a long time, obviously the layoffs in the last week. And the baseball department of ESPN was hit pretty hard. Reports that they're cutting Carl Ravitch back. Baseball Tonight will no longer have the same presence it did. Jason Stark is gone. In your mind, what does it tell you about baseball, about ESPN, and about the state of baseball as it's viewed by the American populace that ESPN seems to be putting it on a back burner?
Well, again, this is business. This is a business decision, and everything's being done business. It has nothing really to do with baseball. It has nothing really to do with hockey, and it really doesn't have much to do with personal biases against individual people. You know, when you're paying $1.9 billion for the NBA and you're paying $1.6 billion a year for NFL football, that adds up really quickly. And now, you know, with the millennials, you know, cutting the cord, as they're saying, and 10,000 people a month or whatever it is, you know, giving up their cable and going to the Hulos and the stream services of the world, that money adds up really quickly. You know, I got laid off about 2 years ago. 350 of us got laid off the last time. You know, Disney had asked for $270 million back because of people cutting the cord. So 350 of us got laid off to try and get close to that $270 million figure. I don't know what the figure was this time that was asked for, but people have continued to cut the cord. And while ESPN is charging us, you know, the people outside, $7 to $8 a month for cable, at 10,000 people a month cutting the cord, you know, that adds up really quickly. So this was a business decision. You know, baseball is not going away on ESPN. The 18-inning game last night was on ESPN. Live baseball will continue to be there. It is the studio shows and some of the other. I think you're going to see ESPN push more towards as much live programming as they can and get away from the studio stuff. You know, it's the studio stuff where at least you hear people can get that information, those highlights, that news on their phone quickly, wherever they want to get it. So the value of that highlight show is not as great as it used to be. But live sports continues to be the best reality TV there can be. You don't turn it off. You don't know what's going to happen. And as long as there is live sports and there's an NBA and there's Monday Night Football and there's a national championship game in college football, ESPN's going to be fine. But they do need to look at and try and figure out a new business model. Because, look, I could tell you, you know, I grew up watching SportsCenter. I worked there for 30 years. But, you know, the 6, the 11, the 2:30, it was appointment viewing. You needed to be there three times a day. That game has changed. And ESPN still needs to figure out the best way to work that all around. But it's not that they're giving up on baseball and they're giving up on other things. They're trying to meet to the shareholders' demand to keep making profit for the company. And it's now big business, and that's the thing that makes the decisions.
Barry Sachs, thank you so much for coming on, throwing some Yankees knowledge on us and touching on the ESPN thing as well.
Anytime, Alex. Appreciate it.
Call, and it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call. The game within the game.
Welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth here with you once again. Jimmy Young, our producer and Snap Call Sports Director, across the table. What's wrong with your hands?
I don't want to put my hands on the table because it makes noise.
Oh, yeah. Table's really sensitive. There you go. So y'all can hear. Talking NBA playoffs here. We've done enough baseball. The playoffs are still going on. We should probably talk about it. Overall, it's been a disappointing NBA playoffs for me. There have been is the first time that every game in the second round has been decided by double digits. There has been just one game seven. There's been three sweeps, probably going to be four, depending on when you're listening to this. I would assume Golden State will take care of Utah tonight. We're recording this on Monday. Jimmy, you've seen more NBA playoffs than I have. Not a dig at your age, I promise.
Right.
What's wrong? Like, do you find this entertaining?
No, but I don't. First of all, in this modern era, you have too many teams in the playoffs. I mean, right now you probably are looking at the top eight teams in the league that are still alive in the playoffs, and there is only one series, I think, that is tied at 2-2, right?
We have two series tied at 2-2. So the Celtics and the Wizards,
yeah,
and San Antonio and Houston. Yeah.
Right, okay, so there are two. So there's one in each conference. So that should tell you that the haves and the have-nots in the NBA are based on who has the best players. If there's one sport where you can almost guarantee that the team with the best player is going to win, it's basketball.
But it wasn't always like that. Allen Iverson never won a title. Patrick Ewing never won a title.
He didn't have the supporting cast around them. But, I mean, Michael Jordan had a great supporting cast around him. Larry Bird had a great supporting cast. Magic Johnson had a great supporting cast.
But some of these teams don't have the supporting cast.
No, they don't. You need those three all-stars.
But they're still blowing through people.
Who? Who's blowing through who?
Well, I guess.
Right.
You're right, yeah.
It's not happening. That the top three players,
yep,
you have the best player, and then you have the other two potential all-stars,
well, I guess,
if not current all-stars.
20 years ago, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant wouldn't have all been on the same team.
Correct. But now with free agency, of course they can. And, of course, the inmates rule the asylum, so they get to pick and choose
right
where they go.
Which is a shame.
No, it's not. It's the modern athlete. It's modern sports. It's just the way it works now. It's not just about the draft. And these guys are free agents, and they can play wherever they want to play. I don't have a problem with that.
But you don't, as a fan, it doesn't bother you that there's no parity?
No.
Look at the NHL. The NBA is setting records for playoff blowouts. The NHL is setting records for playoff overtimes.
And unless you're a hockey fan, you're watching. And playoff hockey is great sport.
It's outstanding.
It's great sport. But you know me, I'm a homer. I need to have a reason to root for a game to give me interest in that game. That's old school. That's just the way I am.
Okay.
Thank goodness for Snap Call Sports, by the way, because, of course, you don't have to have a rooting interest to enjoy the game. Okay, anyway, shameless plug. That's what I'm good for.
Hashtag shameless plug.
That's right. So, you know, let's get back to basketball. Let's talk about this specific series with the Celtics. You know, this is now 2-2. This is home and home. This is the way the playoffs used to be, where you always kind of held your own on your own home court.
But even this, outside of one game, I've been done at halftime.
And it's because of the way the Celtics, it's just incredible how they just check out for a period of time in the middle of a game. And Brad Stevens can do nothing.
I think,
besides the timeouts, it's like the different combination. It has to do with matchups.
He can't figure out how to set up, put a lineup on the floor.
Well, because he's not getting consistency from his players. I mean, that's what a coach wants. He wants to be able to, every player wants to have a consistent performance, and the coach wants him to have a consistent performance because that makes his job
easier. Let me ask you this. Had you ever seen a 26-0 run with five sober, healthy NBA players on the floor? I mean, that's an entire quarter.
It was very difficult to watch. Let's just
have you ever seen anything like that?
I've never seen Isaiah Thomas throw the ball up as many times as he did. And I'm not talking shots. I'm talking about bad passes.
Turnovers.
Missed dribbles. I mean, they feasted on him. And it exposes how dependent the Celtics are on that one player. If you shut Isaiah down or he has a bad game, the Celtics are going to lose. That's just the nature of the beast. They don't have any other good players, really, that can play. Al Horford is a great complimentary player on a great team if he was on a great team.
Ultimately, too, he has to play out of position because they don't have a center. He's a power forward. He's not a center.
Totally a power forward.
Next year, whether it's Zizic or whoever, they'll probably bring somebody in and he'll be able to play the four and he'll be much more effective. But there was a play last night. There's a rebound. It was Horford and Rozier. Again, so last night being Sunday, recording this on Monday, Horford and Rozier boxing out one member of the Wizards. And they both jumped for the ball, and Rozier got up higher than Horford.
Yeah, and how many times did I see a Washington player get a rebound with three other Celtics underneath the basket? I mean,
painful.
It was very painful. And it's almost like it's fundamental. It seems to me you've got to put your butt on the closest opposition player to keep him off the boards. And instead, the Celtics turn and watch the ball. And I think that is their biggest mistake. And the sad thing is, it's not just one guy. They're all doing it. I don't understand it. It frustrates me to no end because I think in Boston, you are definitely tuned to watching a better performance in the playoffs than we're getting out of this team. However, that being said, you're down to 2 out of 3. If the Celtics win 2 games at home, they advance after 7 games. They'll play Cleveland, and they will lose in 4 straight games because Cleveland is far superior to anybody else.
They've won, like 11 playoff games straight?
Something.
The Knicks have won 9
right.
since the start of the decade?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. 11, three in the finals, and then the 8 here. It's like Moses Malone's fo, fo, fo. And you know what? They have the greatest player in the game, if not of all time. I will argue now against Michael Jordan and Bill Russell that LeBron James,
Even Larry.
Larry was great, but it's a different kind of player. Larry didn't have the athleticism that the other players have. In basketball, needless to say, it's an athletic sport. Doesn't mean you can't be a great basketball player and not be athletic, i.e. Kelly Olynyk, who's one of the more awkward players.
Oh, he's
players.
Terrible to watch. He's painful.
He's one of the most awkward.
That's the only,
basketball
I need the Celtics to get
seen.
Eliminated, so he's just off this team already.
Yeah, this will probably be his last performance in a Celtics uniform. And by the way, Marcus Smart, I am so disappointed with his play in the playoffs. What happened to him?
Tommy Heinsohn was saying it looks like he's playing 15 pounds overweight.
Which is a kind of an odd comment to make after a regular season. I don't know if you think he's overweight or not. He needs the bulk because he matches up with LeBron.
Right, he's playing power forward. Yeah,
right. He has to try and shut down guys that do weigh 30 and are also giving away probably 6 inches too, because they don't have a big body. They don't have that Wes Unseld, Jared Sullinger type. Yeah, I went from old to new there. Sorry, but they were both. And Charles Barkley, I'll throw one right in the middle, too.
Yep.
They were all those big, wide-body...
Tractor trailers.
Man, wow. Whatever happened to him, Robert Traylor? Remember that?
I think he died.
I think he did, too.
Yeah. How you feeling about the lottery?
I think the Celtics win the lottery this year.
That's this week, right?
I just think it is... I thought it was the conference finals week.
I think it's the 16th. So it'll be, so we'll, oh, it's, you know what? So we'll have the show next week will be Monday.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday will be the lottery.
It's like the, yeah, it's so, the first game. It's in the conference finals.
So
right?
we'll talk lottery next week. That seems like a good place to end it. We'll leave you there. So you come back, you know, real quick, just don't need an explanation, prediction for the series.
That's Celtics in seven.
I said Wizards in seven from the tip. I'm sticking with it. It's looking real good right now.
They have better personnel.
The Wizards?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, John Wall's outstanding.
John Wall is outstanding.
Bradley Beal's played terrible. He's averaging 20 points
a game.
Real quick
about John Wall. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, LeBron James. Is he next?
Is that for MVP?
Just the best player in the league. I mean, I'm not.
I mean, I think I mean Anthony Davis probably I'd throw in there, but no, he's in the top five. He's in the top 10, if not the top five.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's gonna do it for us this week. I'd like to thank Jimmy Young for coming across the table with me discussing some basketball, Matt McCarthy and Barry Sachs for talking baseball. Hopefully, we get some Red Sox Yankees discussion throughout the year. You can follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes. Also subscribe on SoundCloud. Make sure to download the Snap Call Sports app. They've been nice enough to bring you this podcast. We'll talk next week. NBA lottery. We'll have some conference finals. We'll know the teams for the NBA and the NHL. Of course, the baseball season moves along as well. Until then, I am Alex Barth. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Calling It with Alex Barth. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.